I remember reading somewhere, Natalie, that you thought that this whole thing was a setup and that it was kind of premeditated. How did you come to that conclusion, or did the cops tell you that?
You know, it's so hard to remember everything that was told to me 12 years ago. The person, Peter was selling pot, as I mentioned previously. To the best of my recollection,
Welcome back to another episode of Cold Red. I'm Ray Carr, and with me always is usually Fitz. However, tonight, Fitz is a little under the weather and can't be with us. So I'm going to be running this whole thing solo tonight. But this season, we have made it a point to recognize various victims and survivors of violence and talk to some of their family members to help you, our audience, understand what life must be like for them after suffering such a tragedy. Today, we have a unique guest named Natalie DiSabatino. Natalie's brother, Peter, was murdered in front of his apartment a little over or almost 12 years ago today. You know, this is about a cold case, and Natalie's going to help us shed some light on this heinous crime and what it's been like for her family. Natalie, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Well, get started a little bit, Natalie. Why don't you tell us a little bit about you, and more importantly, tell us about Pete.
I would love to, and thank you again, Ray. I really appreciate it. And I'm so sad that Fitz isn't here. I hope that he is feeling better and on the up and up soon. My name's Natalie. I am a communications professional working at a Fortune 500 company. I am 35 years old and I recently gave birth to my first child. Her name is Olive. I also just got married this year and I also have a stepdaughter who is 8 years old. Peter was the youngest of the three of us. I have a sister who is in between, who's a 2 years younger than me, and Peter was 5 years younger than me as well. And people would often describe us as the Three Musketeers, because we were very close growing up. We've all had the same second grade teacher, and she would describe my sister, who is much more introverted than the two of us, as Caroline is stuck between two very loud bookends, if you can believe it. So Peter was incredibly outgoing, loved to be with family, very athletic. He was played lacrosse and went in high school and football and soccer. One of my favorite stories about him as a kid is poor boy had braces. So when he was playing indoor soccer, he had and because the braces are so big, they like puffed out his lips. He accidentally like ran into someone on the soccer field, but because of the way the braces were and they hurt his mouth, he turned around with his teeth kind of showing. So we got a foul because they thought that he had done it on purpose, but he really was just like in a lot of pain. So that's kind of a good story of Peter. You know, he very charismatic, loved a practical joke, as we all did. I will say I was definitely a tough older sister, and I loved to mess with him. When we were little and we were getting our flu shots, I would tell him that he needed to make a muscle really quick before he got the flu shot so it wouldn't hurt, knowing that it would. I know, terrible, but we all liked to mess with one another, and we liked to have a good time. And I miss him. I miss him dearly.
I know it's going back to November of 2012, which is almost 10 years ago. What was it like for your family prior to? I mean, it's you're right before the holiday season. My goodness, I mean, I can't imagine. Well, I can imagine because it's happened in my family too, but not a murder, but I've lost a child. So I get it. But what was life like for you prior to that?
Peter was murdered 2 weeks after his 20th birthday. And that was the last time I saw him. So my sister and I had gone to that same apartment 2 weeks earlier to spend his birthday with him. And the last picture that we have together is the three of us, and he's wearing a shirt that says, "It's good to be king." And it couldn't be a more perfect shirt for Peter. That night, the day before, you know, I was thinking about the holidays. I love to cook Thanksgiving dinner and what it was going to be like. Peter was definitely the type of brother that if Thanksgiving dinner was at 3 o'clock, he would show up at 2:45 to eat, help, you know, clear the table, hang out with family, and then head out afterwards. He was a 20-year-old boy. He was in the prime of his life. He just wanted to have friends and have fun. He loved being outside. You know, it's hard to remember because, to your point, it's been 11 years, almost 12 years at this point. And because it's been so long, it's kind of hard to remember what life was like with Peter. I feel like we've had just as much time without him at this point, and it's really hard to always remember what those experiences were as well.
Well, that's such a great point. I mean, you know, 12 years later, I mean, that's more than half his life that you've been without him. Yeah. I mean, that's really something. Tell me what happened. If you're okay with doing that, tell me what happened.
Peter was in his apartment. I'll tell you from my perspective. How about that?
Okay.
So I was working at the Ronald McDonald House at the time, and I was working the night shift, like later, so I didn't get off work until about 9 o'clock. And I was driving home on I-95, and as I was preparing to get off the exit, I passed the Newark exit, and three county police officers come flying up behind me and get off the Newark exit. And in that moment, I thought to myself, whoever they're going to must really be in trouble, not realizing where they were headed. That night I was on the phone with my dad, just chatting with him. And when I walked into the house, I was 25 at the time, and I was still living home with my mom and my stepdad. I hung up with him, greeted them, and went upstairs. Shortly after, my dad had called my cell phone back, and when I answered, I called him back, and he said, "I need to speak to your mother." So I went downstairs and handed my mom the phone, and I went upstairs to use the house phone. And for those of you younger viewers that don't know, you used to have a landline in your house that wasn't a cell phone. It had a cord plugged into the wall that you could call. It's run by your internet company. So I called my sister from the landline, and I literally asked her and said, "Have you talked to Peter today? Dad just called mom. Something seems off." And she said, "No, I'll shoot him a text right now." And I said, "Okay, call me back." I went downstairs, and my mom was really upset. And she was like, she closed me out of the room. She wouldn't. And that, remember, I'm 25 at the time. So she closed the door and wouldn't let me come into the room. I went back upstairs and called my sister back, and I said, "Something's wrong. Something's wrong." And she said, "I just texted Thomas, who's our stepbrother, and she said that he's on his way to Peter's apartment. Something's not okay." And I said, "Okay, I'll call you back again." And it was at that point that another friend of mine had called and mentioned that she saw on Twitter that someone had been shot in Studio Green, which was the name of the apartment complex at that time. And my mom finally told me that my dad called, and he heard that Peter had been shot. He was selling pot, like many young kids do. And please do not get me wrong, he was stupid to put himself in that situation. I think there are many people I know who think, as a young person, we all think that we're invincible at some point. Peter also thought he was invincible and was selling pot. And there was a disagreement, and they killed Peter over $750 worth of pot. Not much.
Wow.
So we Unfortunately, Peter had friends in his apartment that heard the gunshots, and two of his friends ran out and performed first aid on him, and they had to watch him die. And I feel for them. I know I lost my brother, but I can't imagine what it's like to perform CPR and try to save your friend and have them die in your arms. So we didn't know, of course, at this point that Peter had passed on. So we were told to go to Christiana Hospital. And once we finally arrived, we were brought into another room, and a detective came in shortly after and gave us the news. And it was surreal, to say the least.
I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Natalie.
I was going to say, I think the most unbelievable part, but I guess not really, was, you know, we came home that night drained physically and emotionally. We woke up the next morning and there were news vans lined up outside of our house trying to talk to us and wanting to get a quote or have a picture of Peter or catch a glimpse of us. And that was really hard. And I'm very lucky that I am media trained, so I was able to kind of ask them to leave. But I know that there are other victims and survivors who don't have that same specialty and that same capacity to do so.
You know, first of all, on behalf of Cold Red and all our listeners, I want you to know how sorry, even though it's been 10 years, I want you to know how sorry we are that you had to go through something like this. I mean, it's beyond anything that I've ever felt. I don't know how you feel, but I can understand how you feel. Yeah. It must hurt right down to the core.
Yeah.
Did the police, I mean, I know the first question that comes to my mind, Natalie. What's the first question that comes to your mind, your mom, your dad, your sister? What is it that you guys want to know?
I think so. For each one of us, I've always joked that we're all in our own difference. We're each a stage of grief, right? Sure. We're kind of each managing this a little bit differently. So I think my dad would like to know why. My mom might ask a similar question. My sister, you know, I think she doesn't really know a lot of the details. She wants to protect herself. She doesn't know. She hasn't even read any of the articles or anything. I think for me, the question that I asked myself 12 years ago is, what do I make of this situation? Because unfortunately, I cannot bring Peter back. So what can I do to make the world a better place and honor my brother in a way that gives me closure in a sense? So our family joined an organization called Connecting Families for Justice, which was put together by the Cold Case Unit from the Newcastle County Police. And it was ourselves and three other families of cold cases. And so we worked to get cold case playing cards in the prisons in Delaware to help with the tip line and help solve some cold cases. We worked to have cold cases flash at the DMV here in Delaware. I'm not sure if you've seen that, but if you go to the DMV, you'll see those. We also worked to have cold case billboards on certain specific locations in Delaware. I mentioned that I have media training. I've seen, and I'm sure you have too, Ray, so many survivors and victims from any kind of crime, violent crime or not. I'm very pro media, but also I want to support those who've been through something similar like me and help them protect themselves, but also help them partner with media so that they can have their case solved. Or if they're, you know, for example, Peter's case, you know, when there's an opportunity, share the 1-800 Crime Stoppers. Just when you're in those moments, remember those key details so that you can leverage your resources. So I think that really and truly the question was for me was, what can I do to make the worst situation have a positive outcome? And I've really tried to do that. And I hope that I made Peter proud.
I know you have. I know you have. Let me take a step back here, and I'm going to, I don't know, I hope I don't offend you with this.
No.
But I have a problem with the media when they do what they've done, what they did in your situation. You know, one of my son's friends, when they were in high school, he was in a car accident. He was killed. And the boy that was driving was not. He was speeding, being reckless. And this young boy died when he didn't have to. The roads were wet, but the media was outside of this boy's house. And the father asked me to do like you did. And I said, I understand the media has a job to do, but for crying out loud, they have to be able to respect the family and what they're going through. I mean, I never understood, Natalie, how people, after losing someone tragically like you did, would want to get in front of the camera and talk about it. I could never. I could never. I don't know how other people feel about that, but I could never do that. No. And I know that your mom and your father and your sister and you, and look, your sister doesn't even really know what happened yet, because that's her way, and you're right. She's protecting herself. That's her. That's her wall, that she doesn't want to go on the other side of that door, because if she does, she's going to see things and she's going to become upset, and then it's going to start all over again.
Yeah,
and victimization, yeah. It's so, so difficult. So, yeah, I have a problem with that. But on the other hand, I've seen where the media has helped law enforcement solve a case.
Right.
I've seen that too. But, my God, know where the line is, people. You know where the line is.
And I totally respect and appreciate that. I think my thought process is we can't change that. I'm, or at least I'm not in a position to change how the media operates, right? This is an institution that's been around. This is, you know, I mean, if you watch the news, they even have a certain cadence to their voice. This is clearly a cut, paste, and repeat process that the media has. And it's successful. So clickbait is a thing. They have to have salacious headlines. And yesterday's story was horrible, so today's story has to be even more horrible so that people will tune in, right? So my whole point is use what they have to benefit us, right? So if they want to interview you and hear about your story, and if they want to know about Peter, okay, but you're also going to hear about my media toolkit, and you're going to hear about Peter, and you're going to tell me the questions ahead of time so that I can know what you're going to ask me, and I might not answer all of your questions. And you're going to come, these are my recommendations in my toolkit, right? And I'm going to say that the interview is going to be in a place of my choosing so that I'm comfortable and that I can have a comfort person here with me so that when it gets emotional, because I'm talking about a loved one or a traumatic experience, I have someone here who can take care of me and brings me water and brings me tissues and checks on me. So it's not just me versus you. And I think that's the point that I really want to hit home, is that
Hey, Cold Red fans, Fitz here. Are you interested in a career in criminal justice? You've heard me talk about numerous cases I've worked over the years involving the scientific analysis of language known as forensic linguistics. Well, Pennsylvania Western University now has a fully accredited MA program, which I actually co-develop, where I teach forensic linguistics along with various other excellent professors too. This is the only forensic linguistic graduate program in the world, which is both online and asynchronous. That means the courses are 100% on your schedule. We have professor video recordings, academic readings, and real-life case exercises posted weekly, and you can access any time to review and then complete the week's assignment. If you're interested in learning how written and spoken language can help solve crimes and get a master's degree at the same time, check out the Pennsylvania Western University's Forensic Linguistics Program at www.pennwest.edu/justice.
We can't change their system yet. I haven't figured out how to do that, but I want to help other people like me and my family so that we can leverage what they have to solve more crimes, to share the story of their loved one, to change racial bias. I mean, I gotta be honest with you. I mean, I know we're going to talk about this, but even in the article, there's a really nice picture of Peter and a horrible picture of other people. And I'm like, you know, we've talked about racial bias in profiling and in the news media. And so I want to make sure that as a victim and a survivor that we're asked for these photos and that everyone gets the opportunity to share a picture of their loved one that they want. But I digress. We're going down a whole nother rabbit hole, right?
But I'm going to tell you something, Natalie, and having been involved in law enforcement for 36 years, and I know of one instance where the field is not always level when it comes to the media,
right?
Especially when it's one of their own. And I remember when one of their own was taken hostage and was eventually killed, and how that was treated versus someone else. So if you're going to say you can't change the institution of the media, you should at least make sure it's a level playing field. Everybody should be treated the same.
Yeah. You know?
So if you're going to treat your family and other families like that, then that should have been the same there as well. But again, that's a whole nother thing. We're not here to bash the media. We're just saying, hey, listen, if media, if you're listening, you know, have a little empathy.
Yeah.
You know, and have a be a little more sensitive and not so callous, because one day you could be on the other side of that mic and it could be you. Remember that.
I'd be happy to do a sensitivity training for victims up for you and your whole staff, media. Call me anytime.
I know. Now, when we go back, I mean, I remember reading somewhere, Natalie, that you thought that this whole thing was a setup.
Yeah.
And that it was kind of premeditated. How did you come to that conclusion? Or did the cops tell you that?
You know, it's so hard to remember everything that was told to me 12 years ago. The person, Peter was selling pot, as I mentioned previously.
Right.
To the best of my recollection, Peter was selling for someone, like he was regularly selling for someone. And what I can remember is that person told the original two suspects to go pick up from Peter. So I believe his friends told me that originally. Like I think my stepbrother was one of the people that were there that night and like immediately following, and he gathered that information from the scene when he arrived.
So, you know, this case remains dormant for a long period of time.
Yeah.
I don't know the particulars of this case in reference to the evidence and things of that nature. However, I do know that cell phone data is very, very helpful in identifying the people that may have been involved in this. And with that information, I'm shocked that this thing is lasting almost 10 years. But I know that something's happened recently in this case. And I know that you're chomping at the bit to share this with our audience. And I've been waiting for the right time to kind of bring this up. Do you have some news about this case that you can share with us?
Yes, and thank you for this opportunity. Last week, it was announced that there was an arrest made in Peter's murder case. Someone was indicted, and they are being held on a $1 million bond for Peter's murder, which is huge.
So, based upon what you know, was there only one person involved in this, or were there multiple?
The original article said that there were two individuals involved, and I believe that to be true.
So do we have any information about, or the police telling you, is there any other information about this other individual that we don't know about yet?
Not that I'm aware of. I assume that if we are able to go to trial, you know, sometimes these things settle outside of court. I'm hopeful that we'll gain more information on the co-conspirator. Although sometimes, you know this, right? Probably from your history, that sometimes when it does settle outside of court, you don't always get all the details.
Yeah.
I will say that the Newcastle County Police has and detectives and the cold case unit have been incredible partners to us and very thoughtful. And they've shared with us that they've kept Peter's picture on their desks to really try and solve this case. And I really appreciate the consideration that they've put for our family.
I do too. Kudos go out to Newcastle County Police Department here in Newcastle County, Delaware. I tell you, those guys work hard and they don't get a lot of credit. They get the credit for the things that go bad, but they don't get the credit for the things that go good.
Yeah.
And the one thing you could say about the police is they never go away. You know, you may have one officer that retires, but there's another one that steps up to take his place. Mm. And that's what makes these cold cases so, in my opinion, solvable. I mean, there's so many things. Now, your brother's murder is a little bit different than some of these other cold cases that are 40 and 50 years old. But with the advances in forensic science and genealogy and DNA, you know, things that were untraceable or not being able to be tested because of lack of sufficient DNA today can be tested. So when you look, and I look at Peter, and based upon what you've told me, Natalie, he's a likable guy. He's got a huge circle of friends. So in my estimation, from law enforcement perspective, I'm thinking that some of his friends knew who these people were that did this. And I can't believe, and maybe you don't know this, but I can't believe that the police didn't know the names of these individuals right from the beginning. Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, you ask, why wasn't the arrest made if they knew the names of these people?
I am an avid true crime fan. And a couple of years ago, I was listening to one of the true crime podcasts. And I had the thought, they were talking about how laws change over years. And specifically in cold cases, one of the things that police usually try to count on is a change of heart, right? That people who have information, they have a different life experience, they realize that they're at a different place, whatever the reasoning is, that their circumstances have changed. So now this piece of information that might have been minuscule no longer needs to remain a secret, and that they can share that. One of the things that I thought always was a detriment to us was in 2012, marijuana was not as widely acceptable as it is now.
That's correct.
And so I don't know this. This is my speculation. I always, and I think that the police did re-interview a lot of Peter's friends after more recently, but it was something that I brought up to one of the teams and said, I know how I would have been as a 20-year-old boy in 2012. I would have been scared that I was going to get in trouble for smoking pot or being around someone who had pot on him. So maybe we should take that in consideration, because they're not going to be in trouble, or, you know, a lessened crime or whatever it is now. So I think that's a circumstance. You know, the other thing is
good point.
I'm sure you can understand and appreciate this as well, Ray. People have reached out to our family multiple times over the years, trying to share information through social media, through text messages, and saying, like, this is a piece of information, and we always share it with the detectives because they've had a change of heart, whether they don't live in the same area anymore, they broke up with a partner. I think that's really a key to a lot of cold cases, other than some of these new evidence practices that have really changed in technology. Change of heart can really change a case and change the lives of more than just one person.
Well, I could tell you from my experience that nothing ever happens in a silo. In other words, there's always others, people that know the same information. Mm-hmm. So one question I have is, this individual, and we're not going to mention his name because he doesn't deserve to be mentioned, but this individual that's been arrested, was he one of the original suspects?
If you don't know. I don't know.
You don't know. I know, I listened, and, you know, I did a little bit of background and looking at this so I could speak to you intelligently. And in a video, you know, 5 years, you know, into this, your dad's in a video and he says, we know who these people are that did this. But he didn't get into much detail with that, which led me to believe maybe this individual was one of the original suspects, and they had to wait until, you don't want to arrest somebody and then allow them to get away and get let off, because usually you only get one shot at this. And I'm hoping that everybody that was involved in this has to face the piper here. I mean, it's not fair that everybody that was responsible for your brother's death is not held accountable. They need to be held accountable. I think that's important. Justice for all, that's what they say. And that's what I know you as a family, your family's looking for that. You're looking for justice for each and every one of you. And you're looking for justice for Peter too. That's really, really important. You know, one of these questions I have to ask you is, how do you deal with this? I mean, number one, in the last week, the emotions must have been running wild with you. But how, like, I know our listeners want to know this, because I know there's listeners out there that have lost a loved one and they're sitting going, how do I deal with this? How did you get through this? And I know you talked a little bit about it, but how did you get through it? And your dad and your mom, and maybe they're not even through it yet. Yeah. Because now, guess what? There's a thing called re-victimization. This has now come to the forefront. It's been sitting dormant for years. And now all of a sudden it's coming to a head again. And now you got to relive this thing all over again. But this isn't the first time you've been re-victimized either, Natalie.
You're absolutely right, right? I mean, last week was definitely a perfect example of that. Every year on the anniversary of Peter's death, one of the local papers runs a story, which I'm very appreciative of, but they never let us know that they're running a story. So I just see it in my Facebook feed, or someone texts it to me, and then they ask what's going on, and was there an update, and it's a random Tuesday and I'm getting ready to go into a work meeting, so I'm not anticipating having this conversation. For me, one of the things that I did, you know, I kind of talked about us joining the group and helping and trying to find meaning in losing Peter. I really tried to take stock of what I needed to do. I did see a counselor for 10 years, Ray. And I know that my parents both did as well too. Because I was angry at Peter. I was really angry at him. Peter should not have died, and I love my brother. He put himself in a bad situation, which ultimately led to him leaving us all behind to be in this mess. And I think that for other people who have been through something similar, they can empathize with that and feel anger is a normal emotion in grief. And I had to work through that and realize that being angry with Peter wasn't going to bring him back. And honestly, being angry with the person who killed him wasn't going to bring Peter back either. One of the things that I did to help heal was I worked with another nonprofit called Victims Voices Heard, and I went and spoke at the prisons and talked about Peter and talked about how that impacted me. And I also supported another organization through Victim Services at the state, and I went to the youth detention centers and talked to them about empathy and the young boys and what it was like to lose my younger brother. And hearing their perspective and hearing their stories helped me forgive Peter, but also we helped each other, right? I was able to kind of remind them, you're not just leaving yourself behind. There's a ripple effect of those who you're going to leave behind by making a decision like this. And so speaking to those two groups, really helped bring some perspective. And I had to ultimately forgive Peter. And working on things like this and speaking to people like you, Ray, also helps the grief process. And the other thing is going through it. I think when you lose someone, your family kind of assigns role. And I certainly took a leadership role in my family when we lost Peter and made sure everything was good. And when people would come to the house, I would coordinate that. And, my sister and my mom were just sobbing for days. Learning to rely on my family in those times was very healing as well too. So, allowing the opportunity to grow and find a new role in your family, I would say laughing about things. Sometimes my sister and I will make a crude joke and be like, what the hell, Peter? You left us here with all this shit to deal, pardon my French, but we'll just be we make jokes, but our family still celebrates his birthday. And we remember him on the anniversary of his death. And I know that's not for everyone, but that's just how we kind of cope with it. My sister and I both have a tattoo for him. And I try to honor him in other little ways. So I think there's a lot of opportunities. I talk to him in my head and I talk about him. Saying his name keeps him alive. He's not forgotten. And I think that's really important, is saying their name continues to have them in the conversation, continues to keep them in our lives. And I would encourage all of your listeners to do that as well if they've lost a loved one.
You're giving everybody a lot of things to think about, but I want to kind of try and simplify this for them. If you had one bit of advice that best served you, that the one thing that you did, you said, this really helped. This one thing, what would that be? If you could only give one piece of advice, Natalie, what would it be?
I don't know if this is for everyone, but I talked to him. Good. Whether it was in my head or out loud, I talked to him and I asked some questions and I said stuff to him or thought things, said it out loud, and that really helped me. Because I felt like I could still have, we had a different, a counselor once said that to me. She said, you still have a relationship. It's just a little bit different now. And that was really helpful to me.
That's really, really a great bit of advice. I mean, think about all the people that have lost someone close to them, whether it's been in a violent crime or whether it's been through sickness. The same principle applies.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just going to continue to talk to them like they're here.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I told you, I lost my son. I talk to him every day. I talk to him every day. And we have a conversation, whether I'm going to the gym or I'm doing this. And we have a conversation. And sometimes I think he talks back to me. I'm not sure, but in my mind, he does, you know.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the most soothing thing for me when I think about it. You know, and I, you know, I can tell Natalie, you're an extremely strong, strong person.
Thank you.
And that the family leans on you. And I could see why, because you have a lot of strength, a lot of inner strength. And I don't know if that comes from just who you are, if it comes from God, I have no idea. But I think that's really, really special. So here's another question. I have some information, Natalie, about Peter and what happened that night and some of the information. I'm just saying, I'm a listener out here. I don't have any information. I don't have any information, but I everybody's probably thinking, oh my God, he has information. No, I have some information here. What do I do? Who do I talk to?
Great question.
Who do I reach out to?
Please reach out to 1-800-CRIME-STOPPERS or call the Newcastle County Police Department or the Delaware Attorney General's office and ask for John Downs. If you have any information about Peter's case or any cold case in the state of Delaware, 1-800-CRIME-STOPPERS or the Newcastle County Police Department, and they'll direct you into the right way.
That's great. Now, I also know that you have a thing that I never heard of before, but it's like a media kit. That you use to help you in that help you in solving your brother's murder that may be beneficial to other people that also may be beneficial to them. Can you tell them a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, you know, I mentioned a little bit about my experience with the media going through Peter's case, and, you know, we're certainly, even though we've gotten some really great news recently, it's not over. And I call that the life cycle of kind of crime, right? It starts with victimization. And then you kind of touched on this, right? There's points of re-victimization along the way. So whether it's a news article that's reposted, someone comments on a YouTube video, or someone comments on their social media because it's not taken down, a reporter reaches out to you and shares false information. There's a lot of opportunity and media touch points throughout the crime life cycle. So I wanted to help other survivors and victims of violent crime. So I put together this media toolkit and I presented it at the Victim Services Conference last year to really help people, because when you are going through a tragic loss or a traumatic experience, the last thing you should be thinking about and the last thing you are thinking about is media. You said this earlier, like, why do we even have to consider this, right? Yep. But as I alluded to earlier, there are some benefits to leveraging them, and there are benefits to protecting yourself when working with the media. So in there, it talks about social media. One great example is on one of the articles that went live last week, there were several comment conversations that were I was reading, and they were not so nice about Peter and our family, but also inaccurate. And I really wanted to comment on them and set the record straight. And I was like, no, I don't need to. This is going to start something, and then who knows what's going to spill from here. Additionally, it's not my place to share information. That's the detectives, the, you know, prosecutor. That's really their role. I should not be inserting myself into this. There are other, we have a video that we did with the Newcastle County Police. There are comments on there that are not so kind about Peter as well. I think that video is very well done and it's a really nice video of our family, but that's the nature of the world that we live in right now. So in this toolkit, it provides tips and tricks for people who are potentially interacting with media, whether it's with the news media and you're, you know, a victim of a violent crime or domestic violence or something, and the media is interviewing you directly, or if they're calling you for a quote, just, or even social media or print media, or it's various different types of medias. It's to help you leverage and best protect yourself from them.
You know, you make a great point, and our listeners need to be aware that when you post things about something that's happened in your life on social media, you're hoping that a lot of people are going to speak favorably and be very helpful.
Yeah.
But sometimes you get those people that don't do that, and they're just flat out mean, or you call them SOBs or whatever you call them, but they really, really dig the knife in deeper. But I want you to be aware of something to all our listeners, that I think you should still do it. I think you should still use social media, because you never know when someone's going to say something that may open something up, whether it's good or bad. That may open the door to a new piece of evidence. That individual may be somebody that's worth talking to. And we can always find out who they are through social media or through online. So that's a really, really good point, to be able to use that as a tool, which back in my day, working cases, we didn't really have a lot of that, but it's really, that's another aspect of some of these things, which is really, really good. Really good. So yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you brought that up. As we kind of wrap this thing up here, Natalie, is there any final thoughts from you or anything you'd like to share additionally?
I know that my family and I just want to reiterate how thankful we are that you allowed us to come on tonight and speak about Peter, and especially me sharing the media toolkit and kind of our experience. I also want to extend for any of your listeners who've experienced something similar or have been a victim of a violent crime. I hear you, I see you, and thank you for listening.
You know, Natalie, we're not done, you and I. We're going to continue this thing. And, over at Wilmington University, I've started a cold case program where the students at Wilmington University are going to be helping police in different counties of Pennsylvania and here in Delaware, working and organizing and digitizing cold case information to make things simpler for police officers. Because you figure when a police officer has a cold case, I mean, he may have 30 cold cases. And when they're 30 or 40 years old, they're walking in with 30 or 40 banker boxes full of information that they don't have the time to go through. Yeah. So if we can organize and digitize that information for them so it's searchable, it's a lot easier for them to do something. But Natalie, I want to reserve the right to ask you to come back once this thing is over, and you can share with our audience what it was like at the end of this this roller coaster ride that's been going on for almost 12 years now. I really want to thank you for joining us today and giving the audience a glimpse inside of you and your family and the things that you endured as being family members of the victim. That's something that's often overlooked, and that's what I think is really important about a couple shows we're doing this year about the victim. And we hope that your family and your brother receives the justice that you deserve, and eventually I pray that your family could put this whole matter to rest and you guys could move on and go on living. Never forgetting about Peter, though. Never forgetting about Peter. I think we can never do that. With that, subscribe to Code Red Podcast and follow us on all Code Red Podcast social media platforms and coldredpodcast.com. We'll see you next week with another special guest. Until next time, stay safe and be aware of your surroundings. It just might save your life. Thank you, everybody. Take care.